welcome to the Great and Terrible AHS. We're here for season 9, 1984. We're just doing it. Like, this is maybe the most they're just doing it season I can imagine. It's unreal. I'm Ty Tuesday, and I'm joined as always by Miss Shadow Lovely and Slow Beef. Hey, what's good?
Yo.
Hello.
The degree to which they just send it on this is honestly a bit breathtaking. Was this before or after Cabin in the Woods came out? Not to like get ahead of myself.
I'm pretty sure after. Wow, I had to look up a lot of movies today to see all the things that they were ripping off.
2011 was Cabin in the
Woods.
Yeah,
I was going to say, I'm pretty sure that one came very significantly before this season. So it definitely came before then. And it was doing what I think this season of TV thinks it's doing.
Oh, yeah. That was 2019 is when the American Horror Story. Yowza. Okay. Quite a bit. Beaten quite a bit to the punch of doing one of these.
My standing theory is still like, oh, Stranger Things is pretty popular. You know, I think
was this the initial burst? Okay.
That's my, yeah. I mean, you know, we can get more into it as it goes, you know, but, like, I'm kind of two minds of it, because I don't think it's a total, like, just ripoff of that per se, but I think it's very clearly, like, hey, wait a second, you know, that's working pretty well kind of thing. What if we did our darker, edgier version, you know? So, that's my theory. But
I want to say also Scream Queens had just wrapped, which was their other show was extremely, like, very just campy slasher.
I was gonna say, was that like more in your face campy? Because that's how this feels up front, is like they just had so much extra camp just lying around in the sofa cushions and shit. And
yeah,
just like we gotta use this somewhere.
It's right, wild, right? Because like Scream Queens has the tone of like Scream the movie, where it's like this is clearly like they're actually doing, like, this is clearly a parody of like horror stuff. Like, this is not meant to be taken seriously. This is a joke version without being like Scary Movie, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
If we haven't said it too, the season title is 1984, and it's like very much like a slasher, like a 1980s slasher movie kind of vibe to it, you know?
That's one way to put it. I would say they're trying to do as many 1980s slasher movies at the same time as they possibly can, which is hilarious for one character already.
Yeah.
One character who has to be the same character in four movies.
Yeah, it's very much so going down a checklist of like, well, have you seen this movie? What about this movie? But what about this movie?
And I think they're both equally guilty in a way, but like Stranger Things, one of the big criticisms I have at least is that there's a very big like, hey, remember the 80s vibe to it? That's like, isn't that a funny decade? Here's a reference from there, you know, which they do a lot. And it's kind of like eye rolly, but I find they did it quite a lot in this season premiere here. And like more transparently and repeatedly. It was very odd.
They were losing their mind at Jazzercise. They're like, that's the funniest shit that's ever happened.
It's crazy. Yeah. It's
and like, they're going to name drop like everything that's ever happened in the 80s. They're just going to like have a character say it out loud. Like, it's the 80s, so this. It's the 80s, so this.
I know. When do the teenagers care about the Olympics this much? You know, or like how old they're supposed to be, I guess.
Especially when, okay, we'll get into it, but the fact that they're not willing to like drop the Olympics thing is fucking crazy.
We're going to hear a lot about it.
It is insane that none of them are willing to just be like, guys, maybe we should just like read about it in the paper later. All right, well, let's get to it. So title card drop. 1970s, that's right, it's a flashback instantly. Frame one, baby, it's flashback time.
You know what's really funny? Let me get ahead of this. I don't know what platform you guys watched it on. I watched it on Hulu. And Hulu kept in the FX stinger before the episode where it went, FX presents American Horror Story 1984, and then a microsecond later, huge title screen that says 1970, and I'm like, wow, that's confusing.
It's so annoying. Like, they like just, I wish they would stop with all the goddamn like flashbacks and everything, but they just will not.
Damn their it. Favorite story structure. Yeah. Yeah, just doing it in the wrong order a little bit, putting one of the later chapters earlier for no real reason, honestly. They end up re-explaining everything that happens here anyway.
Right, yeah.
To be clear, like, this season could be, I know, like, we basically already said it, but this is just, like, they're like, we're doing a slasher movie. We're doing Friday the 13th. This could have been American Horror Story Summer Camp. It literally could have just been called that, and there's no reason why it couldn't have been called that. The fact that it's called 1984 to this day still is confusing to me. It's still like, is the implication that like 1984 was a particularly scary year? Like, I don't get it. I don't understand.
Still like
marketing. So like 1984 is like a year that's used in media a lot because of the book.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It would have been that's so true. Much funnier. Which, it would have been so much funnier if that's what this season was about.
I mean, if it, again, the problem is Cabin in the Woods kind of already did that. What if there was a yeah. slasher movie about a panopticon that, like, needed to observe and record all of it for, you know, bizarre reasons? Like, just truly beaten to the punch every step, even the theoretical punch that they didn't take.
Yeah. I think this is a bit of, I won't say return to form per se, but I think it's like a step back from the wildness of Apocalypse and Roanoke and Cult, you know, where they're like, we're going to at least start out a little more like grounded. And outside of a couple things, I don't recall it getting too crazy per se, but
no, unless I am misremembering, which I absolutely could be, because there was even stuff in this first episode that I'm like, I don't remember that. I think they stay pretty on brand with this is, we're just ripping off Friday the 13th.
Yeah.
For like the whole season.
Honestly, if they receive feedback that was like, enough, in the words of a character from last season, no more spells. I'm sick of this magic stuff. You kill him with knives. I'm over it. No one casts robot blow up this season, all right?
And then they take that, we get a monkey's paw wish, and they take that feedback, and they're like, oh, so you want more of Hotel, but without the vampires.
Oh, that's
got
ghost.
It.
Ghost is wizards.
Just rip off Stranger Things. It's popular, damn it. Netflix is eating our lunch. Just do whatever. I don't care.
Oh, my God. Yeah, okay. So now we're in 1970, and now it's a flashback, and now we're in the TV show. So this is 14 years before the titular 1984. And we see three camp counselors. This will not be super relevant, but I do believe we get more flashbacks. So just in case, their names are Helen, Midge, and Eddie. And they're trying to have a threesome in the counselor's cabin with all the other counselors sleeping around them. It's a really awkward scene. I don't think we've, which is crazy to say this, but like, I don't think Friday the 13th ever got to this level of awkward. There are so many sex scenes in all of the Friday the 13th movies, and none of them are even a quarter of as awkward as this scene is.
Yeah, it's like, it's not particularly like, hey, let's get out the bondage gear. It's always just like a couple of like camp counselors like, hey, there's a bed here, you know, let's just have sex or whatever, and Jason's
also,
like, nope, you know.
Like, one of them doesn't seem particularly into the idea of the threesome and just seems more, like, confused that she's there.
Like, it seems to be her bed, which is, like, the funny part about it. It seems to be
like,
that it's her bed.
At first, I was like, are they starting this season with, like, a cuck situation? Are we about to see, like, a cuck killer right away? Just they cuck this girl and she's like, I'm over it.
Oh, my God. God, I wish. I wish that's what the story ends up being. No, like, Midge is the one who's, like, not super into it. And I'll be so real. It's this season. I don't know if it's the whole season, but this episode in particular is so fucking dark. It's so hard to see in so many of the scenes that at the first I thought there was only two people in this scene until there was a shot with both of the girls and I was like, holy shit, there's two of them.
I feel like They're trying
Sorry, they put Emma Roberts in the fucking in the mud camo from the end of, from the end of Predator at one point. Yeah. And she's just like invisible. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Like to the point that one of the characters takes longer to recognize she's there and is like, "Holy shit. You scared the hell out of me. Are you hiding from the Predator?"
No, they haven't seen that movie yet, so they haven't been able to rip it off. So they're trying to have a three-way, and it's really awkward, and they've like put, they're in bunk beds, obviously, because it's a fucking summer camp, and they've put like sheets up around the bunk bed to like keep other people from seeing, and I'm like, well, they know you're like fucking in there, right? Like, there's no way they don't think you're fucking in there. Why else would you have done this? And then later, we're gonna see an outside shot, and like, there's like a light source inside of it, so you can just see the shadows being cast of the three of them getting busy. And I'm like, what was the point of the sheets then? What are we doing?
It's cool. I have a silencer on my condom.
Yeah.
But you know, in real life, they don't work that well, so it's almost louder now. But yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It just sounds like...
Yeah.
Oh, the wiener sounds like some dark shit. No.
Like one of those little guns from cartoons that pops out and says bang.
I like the Splinter Cell 3 like glowing things over it, you know.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
And we are immediately ripping off Friday the 13th. And I don't just mean like, oh, they're doing summer camp and there's a killer. That's why they're... No, like they've... right off the rip, we're doing the... We're watching from the killer's POV shots, which is what the first Friday the 13th movie is famous for. Just literally right off the rip, 30 seconds into the season.
And we mean POV, what the words mean, by the way. Like, you are in the point of view. The camera is the killer's head in this case. The internet's been really bad about knowing what POV means recently, and it's been pissing me off.
Yeah. No, POV parentheses real of, like, the camera is a hand cam, it's shaky cam, and it is supposed to be from the eye shot of the killer. This is not exclusive to Friday the 13th. They do it in Halloween. They do it in several other movies. It's just most notably in Friday the 13th because, spoiler alerts for Friday the 13th, the first movie, the killer's not Jason Voorhees, it's his mother. And you find that out at the end that's who's killing everybody, but it is a misdirection because you think you're looking from the eyes of Jason Voorhees the whole time. And they're just doing that. They're just like, we're looking from the perspective of the killer. And they'll do so many shots throughout this episode where we are looking from the perspective of the killer at the people who are in the scenes, even in the present time, which is 1984. But anyway, we're POV of the killer and we walk into the cabin and we see the shadow puppet show of the three teens trying to have a weird cuck threesome in the back of the room. And then Midge hears the keys jingling. She heard this once already when they were starting to have sex or, like, starting to get frisky. But then she didn't really, like, she, like, stuck her head out of the pillow for it and was like, that's weird.
Anyone entertaining a baby out there?
Yeah. And then she hears it again and she's like, what is that? And I'm like, if you can hear that shit that loud, that shit has to be fucking insanely loud. If you heard it outside and now you hear it in the cabin, that shit has to be so fucking loud. Helen thinks
like
it's
whipping
wind chimes.
His keys against the wall, just like slapping his keys against the cabin.
If that was the case, you'd think that would wake up the other counselors.
Maybe he's trying to signal to them to stop having sex. Like, hey, I can hear you. Like, you know, jingle, 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 jingle. Hello.
Oh, like a passive aggressive neighbor.
Terror radius.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like that when you're like, ahem, ahem, you know.
Like. Yeah. So Midge, who is not super into the having of the sex, watches the other two start getting like more into the sex, and she takes her shirt off to start joining them. And the microsecond she takes her shirt off, we're in her like POV for a second.
A local Ronin unsheathes his katana.
Yeah, yeah. shing. shing. It's just like the most generic stock sword unsheathing noise I've ever heard, which is super confusing given what's about to happen.
Right.
Yeah. in like the split second that her like POV is blocked, we only get to be in her POV for the second it's blocked. And I'm like, what's the point in us being in her POV for the second she can't see? The literal second that she can't see. Why not just have us with our back to the other two people and then reveal what she sees when the shirt comes down? Why did we have to go in her eyes to get a black screen? Anyway, and when she puts the shirt down, I assume what is Pyramid Head's knife from Silent Hill has been thrust through the back of Eddie's head into Midge's head all the way through like a shish kebab. Longest knife in the entire universe. Also, sharpest knife in the entire universe because it went clear through two people's skulls. No resistance whatsoever.
Yeah.
And we're going to find Didn't out chip? Who did this. And it's Didn't not crack. Like a, it's not like a supernatural being, in case you're curious. It's just like a guy. So
It's like Barney from The Simpsons.
Yeah, yeah. More or less.
So, like,
it's like if
just
Barney
a man.
Just like... just like put a katana through two kids with one movement through the skull too. That's really the thing, is like the skull's pretty good at reflecting, you know, blades and the like.
Right.
Kept me alive more times than I got, you know, it right. is what it is. And no, they just go through like it's like they're not even there.
Like butter. Yeah, both of them, like it goes clean through both of them, which means it literally has to be the length of like two people's entire heads, which is not how long knives usually are. But alas, it was, and they're dead. And Midge is like, holy shit, and scrambles off the bed. And then she gets stabbed in the eyeball and screams. And I'm like, wow, she screamed for a long time after getting stabbed through the eyeball through her whole head. You'd think that would be like a one and done situation. And somehow that scream didn't wake anybody else up immediately.
Because well, they have the sheets up. You know, oh, like watch that's the whole trick. So yeah.
Yeah. Maybe he put the sheets
oh,
up.
Oh, the killer used the silencer I had on my dick.
Yeah. Oh shit, yeah.
He took my dick and then used the silencer. yeah. And then he drags her body out. This is so fucking baffling. He drags her body. We get a shot of him dragging her body out of the cabin. He does this. He drags her out of the cabin and then he cuts her ear off. And then, it's a little treat, and then it pans out to a wide shot, like it cuts, new scene, wide shot of the whole cabin, and all of the counselors are now dead. Don't know how that happened. And now Midge is back on the pile of bodies, back at the back of the cabin, with Eddie and Helen, but missing her ear. And I don't know why he would have dragged her out of the cabin to cut her ear off and then dragged her
then
back
dragged her
into,
back
the,
into
cabin
the cabin
to put her on the yeah. pile in the back of the room.
And then, like, assumed that she was dead after doing all of that? Because I think that's the big implication, right? Is that, like, yeah. So, baffling series of maneuvers.
Yeah.
I'll just put this screaming broad in the dead body pile. It shouldn't be an issue.
Yeah. My only thought is that, like, he started to drag her out of the cabin to be like, I'm taking this one with me. And then, like, she was really heavy. And he's like, actually, never mind. And then he just, like, took
I'm
her back in the cabin. Yeah.
It's exhausting killing all these like, people.
Like when I get ready for a run and I go like one block and realize I forgot my hat and I'm like, son of a bitch. And
yeah.
Just walk back and I'm like, do I even run at all? Yeah.
Yeah. And then he leaves the cabin and he's jingling the whole way as he leaves the cabin. And you're never going to guess what this guy's name is.
Jesus Christ. Yeah.
Mason. Guess, is it Mason?
It might be. We'll see. And then the opening sequence plays. I wish this was better. God, I wish this opening sequence was better. It really is just, have you guys seen Stranger Things?
Yeah. This whole show is kind of that vibe, you know?
Yeah, like Stranger Things in particular has a very specific collection of like timbres that it uses in its instrumentation. And like in particular in its synthesizers. And this is... so directly using those. Like, I wouldn't be shocked if they literally, like, looked up what is the keyboard specifically that made this. Like, which Yamaha FX, you know, 81 or whatever I need to go get to sound exactly like Stranger Things?
Yeah.
Because it is just so... This is where I'm like, okay, yeah, man, I think they were just doing Stranger Things. I think Sylvie's onto something.
Which, it's kind of a shame because, like, this could have been... They could have just done their theme song, but, like... in a synthesizer, and it would have been cool. It would have been like, oh, okay, that's clever, but they didn't.
You can hear the, I'm not great with music. Is it the leitmotif? Like, you can hear the...
Leitmotif.
You can hear it if you're really listening, but it almost sounds like a different song because they added, like, to it, you know, in a way that, like, Freak Show did, but not as good. I like the way Freak Show did it. You know, this is just very plainly,
hey, Freak Show did that, where they made it, like, they're like, what if our opening song was, like, circus-y? And it's like, oh, okay, that's right. Little bit clever. I don't want to give them too much credit, but like, that's pretty clever. This one, the song isn't clever. It's just we did our theme song, but we put the Stranger Things music on it. And the opening, instead of being like, here's a bunch of scary stuff that might have happened in the 1980s, or here's some clips of like slasher movies that we made up or something, it's here's random things that happened in the 80s, like jazzercise and going to the mall, but there's blood overlaid. Is this
anything? It's really lazy.
Is that scary? If I showed you people going to the mall, but there was blood on the screen, is that scary? Do you hate that?
Sometimes. It's also like, sometimes when Stranger Things does it too, they try to put a spin on it, and it's usually pretty corny. It's just like, oh, maybe we can communicate with this, and they hold up a light bright, and you're like, oh, all right, you know. But this really does just feel like, yeah, like, whoa, like, you know, like, jazzercise, what the hell, blood too, you know, and it's like, oh, you're not even trying, guys, come on, you know, but.
My thing is that usually media that does this, like, granted, Stranger Things is a little bit different, but, like, for example, like, the book Ready Player One, not the movie, because the movie changes quite a bit, but the book Ready Player One has a lot of 1980s fan service. It has Tracer Overwatch. The movie has Tracer Overwatch, whereas the book does not. the book, like, very much so is, like, hey, were you born in the 1980s or before the 1980s? I'm going to mention a lot of stuff that you might recognize. And a lot of media that does that does a lot of name dropping of stuff, but like they try to incorporate it in some way to the story in some capacity. This is just a lot of the characters are just going to out loud say things that will place them in a period of time so that you, the audience, knows what period of time they're in. Because the characters will say what it is. It'd be like me as a person being like, hello, Slow Beef and Thai Tuesday. Have you watched the movie from 2026, Hail Mary, Project Hail Mary, in the last 3 months? Have you done that? It would be like that. It would be like if I just like
no,
said that.
No, I was too busy playing Solcesto, which came out in April of 2026. That's right.
I can't talk about any of this stuff with the whole AI thing going on right now in 2026. You know.
That's crazy.
Right. I can't get my oil out of the strain of the movie.
I was going to say, I was like, wow, I sure hope none of this has anything to do with Iran. Wow, that's so crazy. that's how they talk in this episode. And I think for the rest of the season, they do a lot of it. But the good news is now that we're out of the opening sequence, it is in fact 1984. And we know this because we're in a jazzercise class. And we're going to get a cool like title card for each one of the main characters, which they have never done before, even in the season where the characters are people playing other people in a TV show. They have never done this where they're like, here's a non-diegetic title card for each person. They do it in stories, but it's lame and sucks.
They also reused the 1984 like theme song for stories, even when it's not the 1980s. Just don't want to add that in, but yeah,
yes,
anyhow.
They sure did. And in fact, I would argue that they probably ripped off a lot of stuff from that for this, and vice versa. So the first person we meet, we're in a jazzercise class, and it's being taught by our first main character, Xavier, played by Cody Fearn, who was Michael Langdon in the last season, and a big text thing comes up beside him and it freeze frames and it says Xavier. Like he's a fighting game character, which I guess is maybe what they were going for, but it's weird because they're in a jazzercise class. And then the class is full of people, by the way. This is extremely like, guess which one's the anime main character energy, because it's just like a bunch of normal people doing jazzercise and then like five people dressed in insane outfits with insane hair and makeup who get title cards. Speaking of insane people, the next one is Montana, who's played by Billy Lord, aka Mallory in season 8 and Winter in season 7. She looks crazy as hell. I do have to say, every time Billy Lord's in one of these seasons, she is almost always one of the more interesting characters. She channels a lot of chaotic gremlin energy in this season, and she is pretty funny. But that's Billy Lord's doing, not the show's doing.
Not the writers, yeah.
Yeah, not the writers. The way she delivers lines is very funny. And then the next main character is Ray, played by D'Ron Horton, who is only in season 9. And I mean that as in, like, he did not go on to be in additional seasons.
He escaped.
Many of the main cast of this season escaped, which also leads me to believe that either A, the legacy members were not willing to be in this slash play teenagers, or B, they realized they couldn't keep most of their legacy cast in this season because they couldn't play teenagers. Actually, I don't think they're meant to be teenagers. I think they're meant to be like early 20s. But it's one of those things where, like, whenever you see a character, you're like, this guy could either be 35 or 18. I have no idea. It's the 80s.
I think they also kind of keep it a little intentionally vague just for that reason of, like, we want to have them be counselors that are a little older and, like, you know, having sex and all that stuff, but we don't want them to be, like, high schoolers or anything, so they're...
And also, if you're being very direct in, like, recreating slasher movies, I think that was also pretty common in those, right? Of having, like, a character who is allegedly 17 who's played by a 31-year-old.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's like, in so many of those shows, even up until, like, the early 2000s, so many of the... It's like, well, the actor is, like, 35, so, like, I'm not sure if this character is meant to be a teenager or whether or not they just they think teenagers in the 80s look like this. And sometimes that's true. Sometimes you'll see a picture of like someone who was like 18 in the 80s and you're like, that guy's got a mortgage and three divorces. There's no way that guy's 18.
I will say American Horror Story does this a lot better than Stranger Things, which is like has the problem of like I think like a 10-year real life span, but like in the story, nothing moves. So you have like clearly adults like being CGI to look younger, and it does not work.
Yeah,
it's so bad. The last season especially is like you're joking, right? And they're not, and it's terrible. But anyhow,
that is one of my more recent pet peeves in media. Is what if we digitally de-aged people? They always look weird and smooth, and it's always bad. But yeah, most of the main cast of this season is like either not a legacy member or was only in the last season. Like this is only Cody Fern's second season. Also, I do have to say, I don't have any notes in here about it, but I can't help but think about it all the time because I can't not remember that in the episode of American Horror Stories, Feral, where Cody Fern plays a park ranger from Australia who is in love with America so much that he came to America to be a park ranger, they just let Cody Fern, who's very Australian, use his real voice so you hear how Australian he is. And now every time I hear Cody Fern talk, both in Apocalypse and this season, I'm like... No American person talks like this. I don't know what accent he's doing, but it's not like one we use here. He talks really, really weird. And once you remember that he has an Australian accent and he's doing a quote unquote American accent, you're like, I think maybe he needs to take that one back to the workshop. Because nobody talks like this. And I don't even know how to describe it. It's just a very, very bizarre way that he speaks. He has a very weird way of delivering. In a way that it's like if someone who didn't have an American accent was trying to do an American accent. Anyway, the next one who's announced gets a title card is Chet, who's played by Gus Kenworthy, who's also a season 9 exclusive. And he is maybe the most egregious of I think this guy's meant to be like 19, but he's definitely like 32. And there's no way he isn't. And he's like our jock character. I should say, like, going down the list, Montana is crazy. Ray is just like the normal guy of the group who will do a lot of drugs, but is just like a normal guy. He's just like pretty chill. Chet's like the muscle head, like gym bro. And then the final person that's revealed is Brooke, who's played by Emma Roberts, aka Madison Montgomery from seasons 3 and 8. I think she's also like the medium, I think, in Freak Show and a couple other characters, but you guys know who Emma Roberts is.
She plays kind of like the final girl character in this, which it's funny to kind of see her and Billy Lord, not swap characters, but like Billy Lord's character is a little more like, maybe a, not too much, but like Madison kind of from the previous season, and here,
yeah,
like
she's a little more like wild and like gregarious, as it were.
Yeah. Like not exactly the same character at all, but like, yeah, like exactly, like more exactly. And to see like kind of a more demure Madison per se, or Emma Roberts playing a more demure character.
Yeah, so. It is also very weird because, like I said, this is coming off of Scream Queens rapping, and Emma Roberts in Scream Queens plays a character named Chanel Oberlin, and like that's a running bit, is like all the characters are named Chanel. And Billy Lord also plays a Chanel, and they kind of, again, play like opposites in that specific case of like Billy Lord's kind of like the quieter, like more reserved one, and Emma Roberts is very much so like a Madison Montgomery type. So not only like is that their usual typecast, this is like the only time where they do the reverse, and it is kind of hard to like unassociate them with the characters they usually play, especially in regards to playing alongside each other as characters. It's weird that they kind of switch it up in this season, because I know that American Horror Story is an anthology, but like when you use the same people over and over again and you insist on an expanded universe, it's really hard not to associate people with their previous characters, especially if they don't look any different. Yeah,
or they have like very similar personalities, as is the case with like Evan Peters' characters in a couple seasons.
Or how Sarah Paulson kind of always looks the same in every season and kind of has the same demeanor, unless she's like a complete freak. And I don't mean Freak Show. I'm talking about Miss Venable, to be clear. Nothing really happens. We get a whole like 3 to 5 minute long jazzercise class, and nothing happens except for the people like working out in it. It's not like, it doesn't like further the plot. The only thing we see is like Chet like sexually harassing Brooke by like showing her his like dong outline, which is like nothing for no one.
And like everyone else is like horn dogging at each other the entire time. I think that's the big thing they want us to take away from this is at a peak of a sexual liberation. And I think they want us to think that because later on they will say it directly to the camera multiple times. So.
A character will say, and I quote, "Haven't you ever heard of the sexual revolution?" And another character will say, "Sex won." if subtlety were an art form, never mind. Anyway, so the class is over, and now it's the shower room, and Brooke and Montana are in the showers, and Montana has done what I assume is, like, the female version of, like, the breaking of guy code of getting in the urinal next to the only other guy in the bathroom when there's a bunch of other empty urinals, by getting in the only shower right next to Brooke that is, or, like, getting in the shower right next to Brooke when there are, like, 80 other free showers. Insane. And then she's like, "Don't worry, I'm not a lesbian. I'm just really, really friendly. Also, you're super hot." And I'm like, this is like word for word the opening of Pitch Perfect. Literally. And all I can assume is that Ryan Murphy is super tilted about Pitch Perfect because he did Glee. And Pitch Perfect was like well beloved, and Glee is kind of like widely made fun of. But literally, they just rip off that scene from Pitch Perfect. And then Montana's like, "So, I saw you ogling my friend Chet's mound," whatever the fuck that means. And she's like, "I can introduce you if you want." And Brooke's like, "No, thank you." And Montana's like, damn, everyone usually comes here to fuck. That's crazy. And then Brooke's like, no, thank you. And like walks away. And she's like, the last American virgin. And this is kind of Montana's character, is like, she just says silly shit. And like, that's her character. And then now it's the locker room and Montana is still talking to Brooke. And she's like, you know, this is where the character starts saying facts out loud so that we, the audience, get information. And it's never been more obvious than this specific episode. She's like, well, this is L.A. And, you know, because we're in L.A., you have to be aggressive to make friends. It is the year 1984, because the year 1982 was 2 years ago when I started aerobics because I read about it in the Rolling Stone magazine. And I'm like a little bit being hyperbolic, but like not much.
Not really, no.
Yeah. Like I'm
now
only
for
being
my
hyperbolic.
Aquanet hair spray. Yeah. Like, yeah. Like,
I'm being hyperbolic because I don't remember exactly what she said, but like I am hitting all of the key points that she says verbatim.
You are being less hyperbolic than one would want.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm saying almost the real dialogue. And then they have that conversation and they decide to leave the locker room. And as they're leaving the locker room, now fully dressed, they're walking up to Xavier, Ray, and Chet, who are like getting a green juice at the thing. And by the way, almost every scene, I didn't even bother notating them, almost every scene has a popular song from the 80s playing, and some of them are very on the nose. Like the one that's playing right now is Cruel Summer. And later, when something that you would expect to happen happens, the song Somebody's Watching Me will start playing. Yeah. There's a lot of licensed music in this episode.
That's
a lot.
I think that's the problem, because they would do shit like this, like Hotel California in the premiere of Hotel, you know? But I guess 80s music is probably cheaper to license, so it's like, we could fit like four of these in here, you know? And they don't stop, you know?
And boy, howdy do they. As they're walking up towards the boys, Montana just fucking chucks her gym bag across the room. Like, they're in the lobby of the gym, and she just fucking yeets that motherfucker across the room in a way that does not make any sense. It will be used as a conversation point later, but like right now it doesn't make any sense. So for us, the audience, we're like, that was weird, that she would just do that, just chuck her shit across the room. And as they approach, oh god, everyone, it's we're about to get into the worst element of this season. So as they're walking up to the counter, the boys, specifically Xavier, are talking in great and gruesome detail about a murder that happened the day before. And before you ask, yes, they're talking about a real murder of a real person that happened. And even funnier than that, but funny in not a ha-ha way, but funny in a American Horror Story way, they literally just ripped the line from the Wikipedia article about this murder. Of how they died. Like, they use the same verbiage and everything. They just straight up rip it from the wiki.
Isn't this, like, literally supposed to be Richard Ramirez
again?
Yes,
it is.
Isn't this just, like, he was already in another season. Yeah. This is an insane level of double dipping on characters, because it's a real guy that you're double dipping on.
Yeah.
We might as well just rip the Band-Aid off. I hate to be the bearer of bad news. Richard Ramirez is a character TM this season. And I mean that like biblically. Like, he is a capital C character this season.
Like, we're going to meet him this episode and you're going to think, oh, that's how they work in Richard Ramirez. But he'll be back.
Yeah. In ways you don't want him to be.
It's
also a new guy playing Richard Ramirez, because as we've mentioned,
that's what confused me. Yeah.
He was in a previous season of American Horror Story, and I guess they were like, well, this is American Horror Story, we can't have the same person playing the same character, it has to be a new person. So they get a new guy. Yeah. And they must have really only like just done a cursory like sweep over the Wikipedia article for Richard Ramirez, because they took away precisely two things about that guy. He doesn't like using doors, which isn't even the right guy, by the way. And two, he loves Satan.
Stinky.
No, I wish it was Satan. Stinky. I wish it was Stinky. They never mentioned he's Stinky, but they should, because that is one of the most notable things about him, is that he was fucking Stinky. But they never mention that part. So yeah, they're talking about a real fucking murder that Richard Ramirez did, the first murder that he did. And just great detail at the gym counter. And Montana comes up behind Xavier while he's doing this and gives him a hug and is like, oh, you talking about your last date? And he's like, excuse me, my cousin's in the LAPD, which I'm going to say out loud so that I can remind you that we're in LA. And they think there's a serial killer around and they're calling him the Night Stalker. And I'm like, yippee.
Did you say Night Court, which was airing in the 80s? No, the Night Stalker. I'm sorry, go ahead.
It just starts playing in the background on one of the TVs. And then Brooke, who like I can relate to in this scene, who has no social skills whatsoever, blurts out to all of these strangers that she's just met, oh, I heard that serial killers are more active in the summer when it's hot. And everyone looks at her like, who are you? And I'm like, you know what? Me too, girl. I'm not good around new people either. I would like to remind everyone that she says this, though, because in about 5 minutes, it's going to be relevant, more relevant than you think, in a dumb
she
way.
She says explicitly, yeah, she's like, they're active because, you know, people like to sleep with their windows open in the summer. So serial killers love to climb in their windows and stab them. And I'll be real, that's a pretty big logical leap.
And also, on top of that, I'm saying this in response to you telling me there's an active serial killer in the area that you're going to repeat and emphasize multiple times over the next 10 minutes is active and is in our area and we should try to avoid. Anyway, Montana introduces all of them and is like, hey, this is my crew, and Chet goes out of his way to shake Brooke's hand. So they're emphasizing that Chet is very into Brooke, which is not going to seem like that by the end of this episode. And Brooke's like, oh, how'd you all meet? And then Ray explains that Xavier and Montana met in traffic, which Xavier's like, well, she rear-ended me on my way to an audition. And I'm like, yeah, you know what, Xavier? You're right. That is an insane way to describe rear-ending someone, by meeting in traffic. Because that's not even the same thing. That's not even like, you can't just be like, well, they met in their car. Like, that's the closest, like, similarity to those two things is there was vehicles involved. But yeah, Xavier is an actor and he teaches aerobics. And then Ray says he met Chet at the gym and there's no follow up to that. And then Ray met Montana at a party and they name drop another famous person from the 80s who I forgot to write down. And then Brooke's like, you know that famous person? And they're all like, nope. And then they don't follow up on that. They just wanted to say the famous person's name.
Did we really need an audit of how all the characters know each other, too? Like, can't we just leave it at, like, yeah, they're friends and they're, like, you know, that's it? But, like,
that's what happens when you get introduced to a new group in the real world, generally. Yeah, is you just get to, like, learn everyone's names and then you figure out slowly over the course of time.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't usually know, like, the minutes of, like, the notes, the meeting notes of, like, how they all came to be.
But it doesn't, like, help anything, right? You're not like, oh, Chet's a meathead because he met Ray at a gym. Like, no, he is later because he explicitly says he is and does things that a meathead does. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like, ah, they met in traffic because she's such a bad driver. You know, it's, I don't know, it's just annoying. But
and also, I guess Xavier and Montana briefly dated. He does mention that as well. It's not relevant. He just says that. And then Xavier puts on his backpack like an 8-year-old boy would put on his backpack. And I think maybe Cody Fern forgot that he wasn't playing Michael Langdon for a second. And then he's like, now back to my serial killer thing, which is the more important part of this conversation. The LAPD thinks this guy's going to go on a rampage like the Son of Sam. I'm name dropping another thing that happened in this time frame. So we should get the fuck out of town. I'm going to work at a summer camp all summer so I don't get murdered. And I'm like, well, great news, buddy. Richard Ramirez almost never killed men. In fact, I don't think he ever did kill any men unless they happened to be, like, with a lady.
Wow. Stinky and a misogynist? Oh, but super. I repeat myself. Am I right, ladies?
It's interesting that they forgot to mention that in American Horror Story, that he was also, like, brutally misogynist and hated women and committed crimes against women specifically. Weird.
old red pill Richard Ramirez, they called him. That's right.
Oh my god. Don't give them any ideas, Slubby. They'll bring him back for season 15. As a, like a Jason Voorhees resurrected situation. So yeah, Xavier's like, I'm going to a summer camp to be a camp counselor so I don't get murdered. And he's like, oh, you guys should also drop everything you're doing to also come be camp counselors with me all summer. By the way, the job starts tomorrow. You should do it. And they're all like, oh, well, we all have reasons that we could do it. Yeah. Ray wants to get the fuck out of the city because I guess he's scared of the serial killer. Chet doesn't want to be around because of the Olympics, because he hates the Olympics. And we'll get into that later because we're already running long and he's going to, believe me, he will remind us how much he hates the Olympics for the rest of the episode. And then Montana asks Xavier if she would be allowed to teach aerobics at the summer camp. And Xavier's like, can't see why not. And I'm like, in fucking sane. Either the people who wrote this show don't know what a job is, or the 80s were fucking crazy that you could just walk up to a place miles away from where you live and be like, are you starting the camp today? And they're like, yeah. And they're like, can I teach aerobics here? And they're like, sure.
Yeah, no, because they don't have plans or anything. They don't, like, you know, they have all these kids coming and they take money, but there's no agenda. It's just like, do whatever.
Especially when we meet the person who runs the camp, and she seems like maybe the most structured and self-serious person in the world, maybe.
Yeah. And also, all of these people are just like, yeah, sure, I don't have anything going on. I don't have a job or anything. I can just drop everything and go be a camp counselor for 3 months. And Brooke, who's maybe the only normal person, is like, oh, no, like, I do have stuff going on. I'm in college. I'm going to be a vet tech. And Xavier's like, you should stop doing that. And you should come with us instead so you don't get murdered. And she's like, no, thank you. And then as
one of them even tries to talk shit when she's like, yeah, I want to be like a veterinary assistant. And then one of them's like, oh, aiming high. And it's like, fuck off. We need people in the medical field. You like having a dog? Shut up.
I think it's Montana who says that. And even like Ray is like, shut up. Like, the medical field's important. And she's like, you're an orderly. Please. And I'm like, that's another job that we need. Like, what do you mean?
Yeah, right.
Oh, someone has to clean up the hospital. Oh, big whoop. Like, we had a whole thing about this with surgeons being like, it's not my fault people died because I didn't wash my hands. And we had to be like, yes, it was.
And as they're leaving, they're all leaving Brooke behind because she's like, no, I don't want to. Because all of these other people have now changed their mind and decided they are going to go be camp counselors tomorrow in a different city or a different town. Brooke's like, oh, Montana, here's the bag you chucked across the room for some fucking reason that you were just going to leave without. And Montana's like, oh, yeah, my bad, I forgot. And then comes back and, like, gets it. And she's like, by the way, if you change your mind, here's my number, and writes her number on her arm. And I'm like, where'd you get the pin from? If you left your bag here, where'd the pin come from? Anyway, it's nighttime now. And Brooke gets to her apartment, and we have a whole scene of her like pulling up to the apartment, and we see that her apartment has like a gate that she opens and then leaves unlocked because Brooke's maybe the dumbest person in the entire universe. Like, it's a gate to her apartment complex, which means not only did she endanger herself, but also everyone else who lives in the complex. And she goes inside, and we get a bunch of shots of her doing her nightly routine, like eating dinner and like taking off her makeup and like taking her earrings out. And when she takes her earring out, she puts it in a like a jewelry box, and it lingers on what I assume is a wedding ring or like an engagement ring or something. I don't remember.
Or a divorce ring.
No. Well, she does seem pretty upset about it. Ring. Yeah. She seems pretty upset, so maybe it is a divorce ring. But, like, either that ends up being important later and I don't remember it being important, or this is a dumb shot for nobody.
I don't remember. I really don't remember.
I don't feel like remember it's gonna, either. I think
that's gonna be a thing where Richard Ramirez is like, "Ah, got your ring," or you know what I mean, or something.
Got your nose.
Sausage.
Yeah, exactly.
It might be relevant later. No one knows.
Got your nose. So then she's sad as she's like putting the jewelry away, and then she goes to sleep, and she does the thing she just explicitly warned everybody else in the group not to do, and is sleeping with her fucking window open. And not only that, but apparently her fucking front door unlocked also. The window being open isn't even what causes what is about to happen, by the way. She just also does that on top of what happens. And wouldn't you know it, a serial killer breaks into her apartment, and it's Richard Ramirez, and he tries to rob her. And the way that we know it's Richard Ramirez is because when he's doing it, he is like, "Is this all your jewelry? Holy shit, this isn't any jewelry at all. Are you lying to me? Swear to Satan that this is the only box of jewelry." And I'm like, you could have just had him wear a sign around his neck that said Richard Ramirez, and that would have been less obvious.
Like a superhero.
Yeah.
It's also so stupid because, like, if you're doing the whole, like, this, like, satanic villain who's, you know, hunting these good godly people, you don't tell them to swear to Satan. That doesn't mean anything to them. They don't care. You can say whatever you want to Satan. They don't respect him implicitly. But you have to make them swear to God. Like, that is still how this works, Richard. You don't...
Yeah. The thing is...
Idiot.
The writers are really... Again, the writers know, like, one thing about Richard Ramirez, and they can't be bothered to Google more than one thing. And that's that he had a pentagram tattooed on his, like, or drawn on his, like, palm. And in court one time said, "Hail Satan."
How funny would it have been if they have him, if they have, like, Emma Roberts just, like, wake up and be like, "Oh, what the fuck is that smell?" And
yeah.
Then he's like, "Oh, shit, busted again."
Yeah. I don't remember off the top of my head, because, like, I'm not super into, like, true crime. I know it may not seem like that, but I'm not, like, super into true crime. I just know a lot through vicarious sources. But, like, I think there was even a circumstance where one of the people who survived Richard Ramirez, because multiple people did, literally did so because she could smell him coming. I don't remember the ex, but that's how we know he was stinky. Anyway, he's like, yeah.
Sorry, go ahead. Yeah, I was googling it, and like, yeah, it's
googling,
like,
Richard Ramirez stinky
smell. Yeah, actually, and it's like, yeah, wow, rotten teeth and breath, body odor, lack of hygiene, living on the yep, yeah,
stinky, anyhow. Stinky pee pee boy. That's how we should all remember Richard Ramirez, as the stinky pee pee boy. But
the shit his own pants killer,
yeah,
they call him.
Yeah. He wasn't like a cool Satanist. Like, this show was going
the
to try
shit
and
his pants and got caught killer. That's what we need to start calling him shit like this, so that it's like not cool to be one. Like, Night Stalker sounds sick. The pooped his pants and got caught killer. And no one's trying to emulate that shit.
The full diaper killer, yeah.
Mr. Stinkles.
No, that's season 15. So yeah, he's mad that she doesn't have more jewelry, and he's like, "Swear to Satan that's your only box of jewelry, because I need to emphasize that I'm Richard Ramirez, the real man." And then she's like, "That's it.
Who did real crimes?" Just yeah. To be clear, again,
horrendous crimes, yeah. That weren't just murder. I cannot emphasize enough, were not just murder. And then he's like, "It's okay that I didn't get a lot of jewelry from this, because I still get to do a murder. That's right, me, the Night Stalker, Richard Ramirez, the real man, gets to do, who's already been in the show before for some reason, played by a different actor, gets to do a murder." He says, again, I'm being hyperbolic, but, like, not really. And
I'm not a psychologist. Is it bad to do a fan fiction of a real murderer getting to do a real murder? Is that, like, a bad thing to fantasize about in writing?
Not for nothing, but a lot of historically notable mass shooters have done that, statistically.
That's interesting. That's yeah. A fascinating piece of information.
There is a statistic that
do
would
with
show
that
a correlation.
What you will.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Anyway, Brooke's like, "Cool story. While you're telling me all of this, I'm just going to beat the shit out of you with a cast iron skillet," which, honestly, good for her. as she hits him like twice, she goes bonk bonk with the cast iron skillet, and immediately a man starts banging on her front door and is like, "Are you okay, ma'am? Are you okay? The cops are on the way." And I'm like, "Holy fucking frame one response from this neighbor!" Like, he heard one bonk and was like, "Police. Police, calling police right now." And then he like immediately went over and banged on the door, which is going to be really confusing in about 5 seconds. And he's like, he being Richard Ramirez is like, "Oh no, I would have gotten away with it too if it wasn't for the neighbor who, I guess lives for this and has been ready for this from the day he was born." And he's like, "I have to leave." And he leaves out the front door he came in through, which is where the neighbor was, like, 2 seconds ago. Like, literally, real time, 2 seconds ago. So either that neighbor went to all this trouble of being like, "Holy shit, I have to get involved. I hear one kerfuffle and I have to get involved." And then was like, "But now I'm sleepy, so I'm gonna go back to bed." Or he just didn't care. He saw this guy storm out the front door and was like, "That's probably fine. I probably don't need to follow up about that. That's probably okay." But before he storms out of the room, Richard Ramirez, the real serial killer, says, "I'm gonna hunt you down and I'll find you wherever you go. Satan will show me how to get to you." And listener, I wish that that was like an empty threat. Boy, do I wish that was like nothing. But it will not be nothing before this episode is over.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it's not even like a late season payoff. Unfortunately, it is 20 minutes from now. But yeah, he just
stop
fucking leaves.
Real criminals have superpowers. Please, I beg of you.
Didn't they do that with Charles Manson while he was alive during Cult? They were like,
he
yeah,
was
he could, yeah, he
a force
ghost
projecting
ghost.
Himself to Evan.
Oh, that's, right. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah.
Oh my God! Imagine being one of these people and finding out that a TV show is like, yeah, they're making you an X-Man on this fictional show. They've given you superpowers. Oh my God. So, as you may have guessed, we have not reached the titular summer camp that this is going to take place in, because the first half of this episode is just this, just setting up going to the summer camp. Getting there.
Clear, this is a pretty long episode as well. This is one of them where they started getting really long with like the pilot episodes for each season, and this one's no exception. It's what, like 52 minutes or something?
Mm-hmm. Which would have been like 90 minutes on FX when it was airing with commercials. There was a couple seasons where I think they even did 2 hour long blocks, and I think like that didn't go over well, and they were like, "Well, we won't do that again." So it's a really long episode. This is all precursor leading up to, there will be a middle chunk. It's kind of broken into three acts. There's like this that we've just gone over, the middle chunk, which is the trip to the summer camp, which every single one of these, like types of films, that they're ripping off parentheses, it always has like a, "This is our trip to the place we're going," like section. And it's usually kind of short. It's the length you would expect it to be, in this episode. But they are going to directly scene for scene rip off like five movies, like scene for scene rip off like five movies just in specifically the traveling sequence. And then once we get to the camp, they're going to rip off even more movies.
And then they are going to, at the end of this episode, pay the funniest toll they could for forgetting to give their killer a motivation, which is awesome. And I can't wait for them to just have to be like, "Oh, what do we have this guy do as a witty one-liner?" And then they just realize they don't have one. It's so cool, man. It's so cool.
I can't wait for you guys to meet the antagonist. You're never going to guess what they named him. I guess you'll have to find out in our next episode, because it's at the end of this episode. We got a lot of episodes to still get through, so look forward to that, question mark?
Yeah, thanks for listening, y'all. Look forward to the rest of 1984, where if you want a fun game you could play at home, just keep a running tally of every time they just do a scene from a movie with, like, no subversion. And, like, I think the number might surprise you by the end of the season. So thank you so much for listening. Have a great rest of your night. Bye.
Bye.